Right, good morning. Yeah, I got a vote for continuing to record this, so I'll just do it. These will be files on the webpage, basically unedited, so if you feel you weren't tortured enough in the lecture, you can listen to it again.
I'm just like, are the homeworks on online?
They should be on, yeah.
Oh, because I looked for it.
I thought
I clicked the site and it didn't work.
So you have to go into the past courses webpage instead of just the 602, because the link is broken from the 602 page?
Is there something?
Didn't I have a link?
I'll check.
There's a link on the homepage, but it doesn't take you directly there. It should take.
I'll check. There could be that it's something with the web browser buffering and all, but I'll check it.
Okay.
You can get the regular link on 602.
Oh, okay. Oh, of course it's on 602. I clicked 670. Six, and I was looking through those problems, like, oh, I think that one was this.
You will find some problems there, but that's not the same class. Right. To save you the work of downloading the books which are available through the library, I have on this, which is basically memory stick, these books. There might be other files there, where, of course, I could not endorse anyone copying them. Okay. Jimmy, what else could I say? Okay. Right. I have new homework problems here, which I'm sure you're all eagerly looking forward for. Problem one is relatively easy. That is some property in P groups. Basically, that a subgroup is contained properly in its normalizer. So the normalizer is strictly larger. The normalizer might be the whole group. The group might be normal. And with this, then in the next problem, where this is looking at something which is called the Frattini subgroup, that's in some way the opposite to the Sokal. Okay, with the Sokal we have the normal one, so for the Frattini subgroup we take all. We take the intersection of the maximal subgroups, and that is obviously a normal subgroup. And what is happening is that something, this is one of the cases which very clearly shows group theory is different than linear algebra, because these are elements which basically cannot lie in any basis. In linear algebra, all vectors are equally good. Whenever you have a vector, you can extend it to a basis. In a group, this is not necessarily the case. If you have, say, the cyclic group of order 4, to generate it, you need an element of order 4. The elements of order 2 will never help you there. And that's exactly what is happening there in the cyclic group of order 4. It has only one maximal subgroup, namely the cyclic group of order two, and that therefore is equal to the Frattini subgroup. And what one can do in the case of P groups, actually, you get a nice description of the group modulo the Frattini subgroup is a vector space, and that vector space denotes the minimum number of generators for a P group. So you still have something like dimension which you can rescue to P groups. And in some way, I mean, you have, if you come from linear algebra, you have vector spaces. Some of it, but not all, can be rescued to abelian groups. Then the next class is P groups. Then you have, well, maybe super solvable groups, but they are rather specific solvable groups. And you lose more and more properties. So in general, it doesn't make sense to try to define something like dimension, or if you can only, or if you look at size of smallest generating sets in some way, this isn't telling you very much. For example, every simple non-abelian group, finite simple non-abelian group, can be generated by two elements. Well, in some way, it's nice that two elements are enough, but that means dimension doesn't tell you much there. But for P groups, actually, there it's called the rank, but you can still define something which is called the dimension. The next problem is small. Okay, This has to do with the Onan Scott theorem, which we are going to start with on Thursday or next week. Problem 17 basically should be doable after today. This is about affine groups, which I'll define. And problem 18 is in some way also related to this. It's about constructing certain primitive groups of degree 8. Okay, right. Are there questions?
Can I hone in on work a little later today?
Yeah, sure. I permitted this to someone else in the class, and so I should permit it to everybody.
Should as in you will?
Yeah, should. Should in the sense of that if I would not do so, you could go to the graduate director and complain about your graduate class that not all students were treated equally. You therefore could theoretically lodge a grade appeal at the end if you're unhappy with your grade. I mean, that's basically in undergraduate classes. That's the criterion when you can, when an instructor can be told that they might need to give grades differently or do things differently, is treating students not the same way or suddenly changing the material from what was announced before. So if you say, oh, determinants won't be on the exam, and then there is one on the exam. Okay. Right. In full realization that I did not completely finish one part of a lemma last time, I will start with the definition, because basically after this, this last part comes very easily. And I just didn't put the definition in last time because we were running out of time. So, you know what the general linear group is. That's the group of all linear transformations of a vector space. Well, depending how much geometry you've done, you might also have seen affine transformations. Affine transformations are not just linear transformations, but are composed from translations, that's just adding a vector, and linear transformations. And that group, they form a group, and that group is called the affine general linear group. AGL and F is the group of all affine transformations of the n-dimensional vector space over the field F. Okay, and I said an affine transformation is composed for, you can describe them differently. You can describe them as transformations. You can define them in a geometric sense. Linear transformations are those transformations which preserve addition of vectors and scaling of vectors. Here, basically, you don't talk about vectors, but you just talk about points. You lose the origin, and if you then it's not exactly preserving distances, but you preserve something like arithmetic on distances. Then you get affine transformations. Okay, I said already, and there might be a few things there which one formally has to prove, but you've either seen this, certainly Ryan has seen this in a homework problem last year, or it's not very hard to prove, is that these are generated by translations and linear transformations. There are things which are neither. So you can do a linear transformation and translate, and that is neither a pure translation nor a pure linear transformation. So, this affine general linear group is a semi-direct product. Namely, it's a semi-direct product of, if the field is the field with p elements, then I have Cp to the n, assuming that F is the field with p elements, if it's a field with Q elements, then I would get a CQ to the, I need, yeah, no, I don't even need, yeah, I can write it. P is not necessarily prime. P could be a prime power. There is nothing, I know, that's...
Like the shortest math joke, let epsilon be smaller than zero.
Okay. Right, semi-direct product with GL and P. Okay. So I form the semi-direct product with this GL acting in the obvious way on this group. And this is the vector space, this is the translations. The translations obviously have a structure by composition exactly as the additive structure of the vector space. And here I'm just writing it multiplicatively because I tend to write groups multiplicatively. And this is the linear. Okay, so that is the affine general linear group. One can write it conveniently, and that's basically what the second to last homework problem is about. You can write it conveniently by matrices in dimension one larger, by basically putting one in the bottom right corner and looking not at the vectors, but at the vectors which have been, to which a one has been postponed, has been appended. And if you do this, on these vectors, so you clearly have a bijection between the vector space and vectors in dimension one larger where the last entry is one. On these vectors with explicitly appended last entry one, these matrices in dimension one larger act exactly as HGL does on the vector space. And then you don't need another way of representing the group. You just have a group of matrices. So that's the reason for doing this. Okay. Yeah, and we can also observe that AGL and F acts faithfully transitively and faithfully on the vector space. Why transitively? Because I have all the translations. If I want to map one vector to another, take the difference and do the translation by the difference. Why is this action faithful? That basically goes back to this group is the group of all transformations. If I know what it does on the vector space, I know what the transformation is. There is nothing else to the transformation. Okay. And if this field is finite, this I can interpret this as a finite permutation group. And what is the stabilizer? So I can ask for point stabilizers. The stabilizer in AGL of the zero vector, so all the elements in the affine general linear transformations which fix the zero vector, is just GL, the GL part. Why is this the case? Well, clearly the linear transformations fix the zero vector, so they must lie in the stabilizer. If I'm fixing the zero vector, I can't have any translation because the linear part will never map a non-zero vector to a zero vector. So if I translate the zero vector away, doing a linear transformation afterwards can't rescue it, so I can't have any translation. Okay, so that is the stabilizer. Okay, yeah, so that is the affine general linear group. Okay, now let's go back to the case of primitive groups where the socle is isomorphic to CP to the N. So now back to G is a subgroup of S omega, and the socle of G is isomorphic to CP to the N. Then, of course, I know because the socle must as a normal subgroup must act transitively, an abelian group can act transitively only in the regular representation, so I know that omega is exactly p to the n. Okay, and what we have had seen is, in this case, I know that G is abstractly a semi-direct product. It's a semi-direct product of the socle of G with the point stabilizer. Okay, and this point stabilizer I can interpret as a subgroup of GL and P. And I could do so by looking at the conjugation action on the socle. The socle is a vector space, so conjugation is an automorphism. If I look in the vector space world, a vector space automorphism is a linear transformation, and it was easy to see that this is a faithful way. So I have CP to the N together with some subgroup of GL and P. So clearly, this lies in up to isomorphism, lies in AGL and P. And I had one condition there, which basically came from the primitive. I want that this group acts irreducibly.
So you're saying the semi-direct product lies.
The semi-direct product, yes, so this is, yeah. The semi-direct product lies in AGL, yeah.
And with the notation you're using, so that's saying it's isomorphic to a subgroup of?
Yeah. Since I said equal here, I'm formally saying the inner semi-direct product, then these both are still subgroups of G. And now I'm saying, this is CP to the N, and this is basically, well, here I probably also should really have said, is isomorphic to. It's not really it's otherwise different objects. The one is a set of permutations, the other is a set of matrices. Yeah. I don't think this is a general symbol. I think it's pretty obvious what is meant with it. So I have a subgroup of AGL and P, or AGL and FP. So this would be. So this is obviously also written as AGL and P. And I said this group was the point stabilizer here. This was the action I had, was the action on the cosets of this subgroup. Well, now I said here I did the other way around. I looked at AGL, or I can look at a subgroup of AGL, where the GL bit, the linear bit, is the point stabilizer. That's exactly what is happening here. And in this world, it is trivial that this action is faithful. So whenever I form such a group, and that was basically where we were stuck, we had said, if the group is primitive, I can decompose it this way. And I said, the other way also holds. If I take a subgroup here which acts irreducibly, and I form this semi-direct product, that semi-direct product acting on the vector space is a primitive permutation. Well, we had seen it acts primitively. Why is the action faithful? Because that action is basically the same as this action. Here it's clear that it's faithful because it's affine transformations. Okay, so so what we can do is from here, that translates now that that implies that such a group G, vice versa, any such semi-direct product gives a primitive permutation group group of degree P to the N. And not just some permitted, but it's an isomorphic. Okay, and because these are subgroups of the affine general linear group, these groups are called of affine type. So that finishes basically what we finished the proof from last time. These groups are called of affine type. And of affine type, that just comes from the affine general linear. Okay, let's look at this in an example. So, I could, what is the easiest case? The easiest case is probably if my n is 1. So, if n is 1, so the socle of G shall be the cyclic group of order P. What is GL1P? GL1P is isomorphic to the multiplicative group of the field, right? It's 1 by 1 matrices for the non-zero entry, and they multiply as the field multiplies. And that is isomorphic to the cyclic group of order P minus 1. Okay. Since the groups I will get are groups of degree P, we know every group of degree P is primitive once it's transitive. And as soon as I have CP in there, it is transitive by default. So I don't need to do anything about irreducibility, or you could talk about matrices. Matrices of dimension 1 are irreducible because there is nothing which you can chop smaller. So, all of these groups I will get are primitive, will be primitive permutation groups, and I basically need to classify the subgroups of CP minus 1. Okay, that depends a bit on, this is basically the divisors of P minus 1, that depends on cases. So for example, if we take P equals 5, what can happen? We can take the trivial subgroup that we can always take, so we can get C5. Then P minus 1 is 4. C4 has three subgroups, a trivial subgroup, cyclic subgroup of order 2, and a cyclic subgroup of order 4, which is the whole group. So I can get C5 semi-direct product with C2, and I can get C5 semi-direct product with C4. And how can I describe these groups? Basically, okay, here, I mean, C5 is pretty obvious how to write it down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, unless you prefer a different ordering of the numbers. Okay, let's do the last one first, because that's a generic one, and then we can see how it happens. So certainly, we want to see 5 there, and that's the action on the on vectors. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, and I need another element. I need an element of order 4. Now, either you try out a bit what permutation of degree 4 would normalize this, you can do that, or you can go back to the linear world. So we have the field with 5 elements, and so what I'm doing here on a piece of scratch blackboard is I'm taking the field with 5 elements that contains the elements 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and I won't draw a bar over it. I mean, that's pretty obvious. So I need to describe the multiplicative group of that field. Well, 1 times 1 is 1, so 1 has order 1, that does not work. What about 2? 2 times 2 is 4, it's minus 1. So 2 square is not, well, I won't need an element of order 4. So the order of any element must be 1, 2, or 4. 2 square is 4, which is minus 1. So the order of 2 results is not 1, is not 2. So the order must be 4. So I will look at this as generator. Is generated by the number 2 under multiplication. Okay, so now to write down the permutation, I need to get some correspondence. So what I do is I do the obvious correspondence. I do the correspondence here, m plus 1. Since I wrote numbers 1 to 5 there, they shall correspond to the field elements when I subtract 1. So how does the second element act? Well, I just need to see how does the number 2 permute these vectors. 2 times 0 is 0. So my second element, the permutation corresponding to 2, must fixes 0, so that fixes the point 1. So I have 1 is fixed. So the point 2 corresponds to 1. 1 by 2 is 2, which corresponds to 3. What happens with 2 here? 2 times 2 is 4, corresponds to 5. 2 times 4 is 2 times minus 1 is minus 2 modulo 5 is 3. 3 corresponds to 4. And 3 times 2 is 6, modulo 5 is 1. So it goes back. So that's the permutation there. Okay? And that is a primitive group of order 20, of degree 5. And what happens here? Here I need to look at a subgroup of the multiplicative group of order 2. That's the subgroup generated by minus 1. So I would get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I get the permutation corresponding to minus 1, or I simply can take the square of this permutation. Right? So my second permutation is 2, 5, 3, 4. And these are the 3 possible affine groups of degree over of permutation degree 5. Because 5 is just 5 is 5 to the 1. Okay? Let's look at a slightly more interesting example. So let's take a 2-dimensional vector space, but let's take the smallest 2-dimensional vector space which there is. So let's say n is 2 and the field is the field with 2 elements. Okay. So then I have GL 2, 2. We had seen that before. That is isomorphic to the symmetric group of degree 3. And that's basically because I can look at the action on the non. There are 3 non-zero vectors, and they are permuted in any possible way. Okay. So what would I get as AGL two two? And I now want to write it down as a permutation. Right? That would be as permutation group of degree 2 square, which is equal to 4. Okay. So what do I get there? I get how the field. Okay, now I need to, if I want to do this generically, I basically need to choose a basis and need to write down vectors, right? So let's say the the field width. Again, doing scratch blackboard. F2 square consists of the zero vector, the vector 1, 0, the vector 0, 1, and the vector 0, 0, and I need to give these vectors.
1, 1.
Oh, so not 0, 0, 1, 1, sorry. And I need to give these vectors numbers, so let's call this number vector 1, vector 2, vector 3, vector 4. Okay. So, what I get is I get the translation. And it is sufficient to do translation with a 2 for generating. It's sufficient to write down translations with the basis vectors. So what does the vector 1, 0 do? The vector 1, 0, when adding, maps this to this and this to this. So this swaps 1 and 2, and similarly swaps 3 and 4. And the other basis vector swaps 1 and 3 and 2 and 4. Oops, sorry, not yet done. That's just the translations.
Wait, I'm sorry, how did you, you were saying...
I'm just looking, what does the vector 0, 1, when I add it, how does it permute my vectors?
Oh, I see.
Right, the vector 0, 0 is mapped to 0, 1. The vector 0, 1, since I'm over the field with two elements, is mapped back to 0, 0.
I see, thank you.
Okay? Right. Now I need to do the linear bit. So I need to write down some kind of linear transformations. And to generate GL, it turns out that convenient generators are the elementary matrices. These are matrices which are the identity plus, which basically correspond to row or column operations at a row or a multiple of a row to another. Since we are over finite fields, if the field is of prime order, we just need to add one and everything else gets a multiple and probably scaling. Well, we are over the field with two elements, scaling doesn't happen. So, what we need is basically we need to take two matrices, the matrix, this one, this matrix, and this matrix. And generically, if you have bigger n, you get obviously more such elementary matrices. Okay, so what do they correspond to? Right, okay, now I wrote column vectors, so I should multiply the matrices on the left with it. Don't worry that it's a left multiplication. I'm just looking how other vectors permuted and not even writing it. So what does this do with the zero vector? Well, the zero vector clearly is fixed. So 1 is mapped to 1. What does this do with the vector 1, 0? Well, it takes 1, 0, 1, 0. This maps the vector 1, 0 to itself. Right?
Yep.
So 1 is fixed, 2 is fixed. What happens with 3 with the vector 0, 1? The vector 0, 1 is mapped to 1, 1. The vector 1, 1 is mapped to 2. So 3 and 4 are swapped. What does this one? That fixes the zero vector. This maps the vector 1, 0 to the vector 1, 1. So 2 and 4 are swapped. Okay. Right. So that would be AGL 2, 2 as a permutation group, as a primitive group of degree 4. Do you know this group? Did you know that group before as a permutation group? Well, what order does it have? It has order 2, sorry, order 4, 2 squared times 6. 4 times 6, that is order 24. Do you know what group it is? It's a subgroup of S4, which has order 24. It is S4, yes. This group happens to be S4. So we knew that before, and we knew it as a primitive group. And that is happenstance because of small degree. I mean, this doesn't happen for bigger symmetric groups. Basically, their socle is AN. Their socle is not some vector space. That happens in this case. Okay. Right. Can I? So that is S4. And S4 also is a primitive group of affine type. If I want to classify all the primitive groups of affine type of degree 4, I need to classify the irreducible subgroups of S3. Well, S3 doesn't have an enormous number of subgroups, and it is relatively easily seen that the ones of order 2 act reducibly. Okay. For example, this generates one subgroup of order 2, and we have seen the vector 1,0 is kept fixed by that subgroup. So the subspace, this one-dimensional subspace, is kept fixed. So this group acts reducibly. And the other ones are conjugates, and then it's clear that they also must act reducibly. Okay, so order 2 will not work. The only one left is order 3. So there, actually, you need to, well, it's not horribly hard. One needs to, might need to think a little bit to write down a matrix of Belden. You have 16 possibilities to write down matrices, and a lot of them have determinant 0. But, for example, if you pick the matrix 1, 1, 1, 0, that has order 3. So what you get then is you get a semi-direct product of, which has again these two generated by these two translations, and you would get, for example, if I took the matrix 1, 1, 1, 0, what does this do? The 0 vector is kept fixed, so 1 is kept fixed. What happens with the vector 1, 0? 1, 0 is mapped to 1, 1, so 2 is mapped to 4. What happens with the vector 1, 1? The 1, 1 is mapped to 0, 1, so 4 is mapped to 3, and that's it. So if you instead take this, and this as generators, you get another primitive group. It's a subgroup of S4 of index 2, so it's A4. Okay, and these are all the affine groups of degree 4. Okay. In the homework, one of the problems, I'm asking you to do this basically for degree, for dimension 3 over the field with two elements. Okay. And there the question is, that group is larger. GL32 has order 168. So there, it's not completely trivial to classify the subgroups and to see which ones are irreducible. So what I'm asking you is only to find those subgroups which contain an element of order 7 and a particular element of order 7, which is a Singer cycle. The Singer cycle is a generator of the multiplicate. If I look at this vector space as the field with 8 elements over the field with 2 elements, right, then I have a 3-dimensional vector space. I take a generator in the same way as here, basically. I take a generator of the multiplicative group of the field with 8 elements. That's not working modulo 8. So there you need to once write down addition and multiplication table for the field with 8 elements. But that's not very hard to do, because the first rows and columns are free, and then you just have very few choices you can make. So that's, and then you can write down a matrix of order 7, and is it automatically, well, it's not terribly hard to see that actually any matrix of order 7 would be conjugate to such a Singer cycle. And that is something which holds generically. These are based that such elements come from the multiplicative group. So you can write down such a matrix, and then that will automatically make any, because such that matrix alone acts irreducibly. It might be easiest seen by looking at the field, or you can show it directly. There isn't much options which can happen for subspaces. And anything which contains it also will act irreducibly. So you don't need to do any work on the irreducible. The question is just, there is this group of order 7. Okay, there is one of order 168, which is the whole group there. You neither need to do much work. For generators, you need to pick a few more elementary matrices. And I mean, I'm not insisting that you do, that you take all, that you write down all six elementary matrices and write me down the corresponding permutations. If you write down one or two, I believe you that you could do it for the rest. So the only thing to find is there a subgroup of order 21, which contains the 7. So basically, you need to do a little bit with the 7. It's a semi-direct product where the 3 acts on the 7. You could get it, for example, as a Galois. If you go back to the fields, you would get it as a Galois automorphism. Right, it's an extension of dimension 3, so the Galois group is cyclic of order. It's of order 3, and therefore is cyclic. So basically, the 3 you need is the Galois automorphism acting on it. Okay, and that will give you these groups. Right. So what we have seen is primitive groups of. Where the socle is cyclic, is a vector space. These are of affine type, and we have seen in small examples that one can basically write them. Okay, there is the classification of the irreducible subgroups. If you ask me, can you give me all irreducible subgroups of GL917? There is a little bit work. That's something we can't do immediately and just write down. But at least in principle, we can do it. We've reduced this to a smaller problem, and we've seen that we can, if we want, we could write this down. Okay. Let me mention one last consequence of this particular fact. So far, any questions about this? No? Okay, so we have to follow the corollary. Let G be a finite solvable group. And let's look at a subgroup M, which shall be a maximal subgroup of G. So a subgroup which is not the whole group, but you can't squeeze anything between. Then I can conclude the index of M in G must be P to the A for subprime P. So in a solvable group, every maximal subgroup has index prime power. What you will show in the first homework problem is in a P group, every P group is solvable, but it's a smaller class. Every maximal subgroup has index P. So in some way there, that corresponds to this hierarchy. But a maximal subgroup must have prime power index. Okay, why is this the case? Well, if we have a maximal subgroup, we can act on the cosets of the subgroup. So consider action phi, which goes from G to the symmetric group of index of M, which is the action on the cosets of M. Okay. because M is maximal, that means the image of G under phi is primitive. Right? In the action, the image of the subgroup is the point stabilizer. If we act on the cosets of a maximal subgroup, we always get a primitive action. So we get as image here a primitive group. Because G is solvable, this image is solvable. Image of a solvable group is always solvable. G is solvable, that means G phi is solvable. So, if a group is solvable, what can I tell about normal subgroups? If a group is solvable, every subgroup is solvable. So every normal subgroup is solvable. So every minimal normal subgroup would be the direct product of simple groups of the same type. Well, the only solvable simple groups are the abelian simple groups. So every minimal subgroup must be CP to some power. Okay, so the socle must be a direct product of CPs. Okay, and we have seen in a primitive group, if the socle is abelian, it must be all the CPs must be the same. So this means the socle of G must be some power CP to the K, and well, the group G phi is of affine type. And that means the degree of the permutation action, which was the index of M. Well, I don't know, why do I call it K? Why don't I call it A? So P to the A is P to the A. And I'm done. So I know the maximal, if I have a solvable group, I can't have a max, if I have a subgroup of index 12, it cannot be maximal because 12 is not a prime power. There must be something in between. Or if I want to look at primitive groups, can I have primitive groups of affine type in degree 12? No, I can't because 12 is not a prime power. I will have them in prime degree, so I have them in degree 3. Prime power 3, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, 16. Okay, so that's the primitive groups of affine type, and I think that's basically the lecture for today. Thank you very much.
It says M maximal implies
G phi is primitive.
Okay.